Elizabeth Barrett as a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, truck owner, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects we all struggle with in this conversation with a reluctant therapist. Happy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Tuesday, Hank. I didn't know that truck owner started to become a badge of resume honor.
Well, it was very important to me. I have a lawnmower, a gas mower that wouldn't start weeks and weeks and weeks, and the grass is just looking crazy overgrown. And Elizabeth generously offered to transport the lawnmower in her pickup truck. And the night that that was supposed to happen, I was wheeling it out to the curb, and I said, what the heck? Just give it a shot. I gave it one more pull, and it started right up. So thank you for the offer, and I'm happy to report that my mower is working.
Well, it is the magic of intention.
Yes.
Just putting it out there, saying, I'm there for you, Hank, was enough for the mower to work again. And it ties in nicely with today's topic, because it's a subject that I don't talk about very often. Maybe because it hits a little too close to home, or it's such a large topic that it's too hard to kind of boil it down to 1 hour each week. But this issue is something that 1 in 3 people struggle with on a daily basis. So it's in our face and in our minds and in our lives regularly day to day. And I'm talking about body image. Body image. You know, how do you feel about the skin that you're in? What is the state of your relationship with your body? And so much of our experience of our body is in our intention or our image or our impression of who we are or what our body represents. And I'm not really sure how that ties into the lawnmower metaphor, but somehow it felt like it did. That if we intend good things for ourselves, if we intend good things in our life, they tend to manifest. They tend to come our way. It doesn't mean that we can change natural disasters or unexpected life transitions. But when it comes to that day-to-day relationship we have with the body that we're in, that skin that we're in, this beautiful home in which we reside, how we feel about it and how we intend to feel about ourselves day to day really impacts how we relate to everyone else in the world. So as we move into this holiday season, I thought it'd be a good time to talk about the state of our relationships with our bodies. Because one of the things you see quite often during this time of year, aside from all of the other, you know, marketing campaigns to get us to spend our money on, you know, millions of things that we absolutely don't need, like something that hatches out of an egg and squeaks or whatever the latest craze is. Besides all of that, the other thing that we start hearing about are, if you let yourself go, if you binge on those favorite foods, you're going to gain 10 pounds, 15 pounds over the course of the time. So watch what you're eating, make every day a wise day, a decision day. And then, of course, all of this pressure about don't put on weight over the holidays and watch out, you'll explode, is to gear us up and get us ready for the dieting season that begins in January, that just continues to feed the $4 billion diet industry. So I guess I want to try to take back some of our power when it comes to how we feel about our body and how we enjoy ourselves in our bodies and over the season, and see if we might be able to reframe our experience. Because I know that there's something that, if not all of you, most of you don't allow yourself to enjoy anymore, because you feel like in some ways it's a sin against humanity or that you will be judged. And so I think this is the opportunity to bring those secret behaviors out into the open and talk about it. Because although there is a stigma around mental health issues when it comes to depression and anxiety, people don't want to talk about it, don't want to bring it out into the open. I think there's an even bigger issue about our secret war that we wage on ourselves when it comes to what we eat every day, or how we exercise, or how we feel about our bodies, or what we feel like each day when we look in the mirror. Then that secret war, I think, in many ways is more detrimental to our mental health and well-being than anything else that we experience in our life. And if we could heal some of that war, if we could move away from the constant barrage of messages telling us that we're not good enough, pretty enough, tall enough, thin enough, if we could step away from that, imagine how much of the depression and anxiety that we experience as a culture would diminish or go away. There was a great quote that I read this week by a woman named Dr. Gail Dinas, and she said, If women woke up tomorrow, if every woman woke up tomorrow and decided that she loved her body, how many industries would go out of business? Think about that. How many industries exist today feeding off these poor body images that we've been told to develop about ourselves by these same industries? So what could be a greater Christmas gift or holiday gift, whatever you celebrate, than to give the gift of loving our skin in some way, in some form, and step aside from supporting these industries that really only exist to continue making us feel badly about ourselves? And so it's not just my own experience with body image or weight or dieting or whatever the story is of that relationships. But the other thing that motivated the show, because as I said, I generally don't talk about this. It's not one of the topics I bring up because it is so complex and it is very personal for each of us. And it is something very personal for me as well. But last week was the art show project in my family psychology class. And so each student is to do some sort of art project that relates to a topic that stood out for them during the course of the quarter. And we cover a lot of topics, everything from family systems to parenting, marriage, death and dying. I mean, we cover the entire life cycle. And I spend a good amount of time, not a huge amount of time, kind of equal to all the other subjects, but I spend time talking about body image and weight and society and cultural messages. And I talk about, especially for young women, how we have created what we call the triple bind, that for young women, it's not enough to be athletic or a good student or to be, you know, pretty or attractive or have a great personality. We expect that all young women today will incorporate all three of those things, that you will be thin and beautiful and healthy and strong and the best athlete in your school and also the best student and a leader in some sort of leadership capacity and do volunteer work and be well liked by everyone in the school. And that pressure has created this toxic atmosphere that breeds eating disorders or disordered eating. And so although I only cover this, you know, in one or two lectures, a great deal of young women in my class this week did their art project around the issue of disordered eating or eating disorders. And I was so humbled, honored, impressed, amazed, overwhelmed, a plethora of feelings. I was just overcome with the courage of these young women to stand up in front of a class of their peers, and I have 45 students in the class, and read poems about their experience with an eating disorder that they struggled with or continue to struggle with. Or this couple girls did art projects, taking a Barbie doll and showing all of the impossible standards that they're expected to live up to, stretched in many directions. Paintings that were done about relationships with food, a song that was written. I mean, just the extent to which this issue resonated with the young women in the class was overwhelming. And it was overwhelming for the rest of the students, because for all of the students who didn't talk about that in their art project, who talked about other issues, many of them wrote in their feedback after the class that this was something that resonated with them as well, that their relationship with their bodies, that their relationships with food, that their relationships to the world really had been impacted by the incredible amount of stress and pressure they feel to be perfect and to be in complete control of themselves all the time. And so for them, I wanted to bring up this topic today, because this secret world, and it's not just women, you know, eating disorders were primarily seen in women for years and years. But today, 10% of all eating disorders also impact men, young men, older men. We see the primary 95% of eating disorders impact those that are between the ages of 12 and 25. But there's also been research showing that for midlife women, there's been a resurgence in eating disordered behavior. In women who had eating disorders when they were young, they start to reoccur in midlife as women go through menopause or their bodies inevitably change. These eating disorders are reoccurring, or if they've gone through sort of life transition, losing a spouse through divorce or separation, or going through this empty nest period of time, these shocking transitions have triggered for a lot of midlife women these disordered styles of eating. And so we're seeing that, you know, 1 in 10 women in the course of their lifetime are going to struggle with some sort of disordered eating. And 10% of all college women report suffering from a clinical or nearly clinical eating disorder. 10%, and those are the ones that are reported. Only 6% of those, only a third of those who are struggling with disordered eating actually get treatment. So we ultimately don't know how many people this kind of secret world of self-loathing and shame and disordered eating affects, because it's not something we talk about regularly out in the open. But we need to talk about it, because those secret things that we do behind closed door, the things that keep us and make us sick. And at this time of year, when we're just engulfed in the world of gatherings, you know, social events, eating, the whole idea of loving each other with a beautiful meal or taking cookies to someone, food is at the heart of this time of year. And for every person who's struggling with a disordered style of eating or body shame or body image issues or feeling pressure, you know, from the culture to look a certain way, there is this horrible conflict that happens internally. Do I allow myself to enjoy the foods that represent good times and good feelings and feeling connected and close to those I love? Or do I deny myself these foods and secretly eat alone in my room or beat myself up or exercise obsessively? You know, this kind of secret shame that people carry, believing that they're the only ones. Because the thing about disordered eating is that it rarely shows on the outside. It rarely shows. People can gain weight, and you might say, oh, that person's struggling with their weight. Maybe they're overweight. That might be an obvious, you know, result of disordered eating. But the majority of the people who suffer with disordered eating don't look obese or overweight. They're usually quite thin and feel like they're obese and overweight. So today I'd like to explore a little bit this topic of disordered eating and try to reframe it. Let's see if we can switch it up. Let's see if we can take back the joy of the holidays and bring out into the open some of these things that we tend to hold as shameful, our secret, our relationships with food. See if we can change the way we approach our bodies and maybe avoid what seems to happen everywhere in January, every time in January, where we become overwhelmed with this guilt from enjoying or not enjoying the holidays and then feel like we now need to get on a program of some kind. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and I appreciate you being part of the conversation as always. Our number is 805-781-3875. You can also be part of the conversation by joining our Facebook page. If you like the page, you'll get updates of what shows are coming up, or you can leave comments there. You can also find me at Elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com if you'd like to send an email. And you can listen to previous shows by visiting kcbx.org under the News Talk tab. We're at the top there. And if you like to listen to podcasts, if you enjoy that, then you can go to iTunes or your other source for podcasts and type in A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist and subscribe, and you'll have all the shows there when you're ready to listen to them. So 805-781-3875. There's a couple of things I'm curious about. If you're willing to, talk about your relationship with your body or your feelings about food or how you kind of get through this time of year or through the year in general. How do you feel about yourself? What is the state of your relationship with your body? And is there something that you are looking forward to over the holidays that you were kind of prevent yourself from doing, but now you might want to take charge of? And is there a food, because this is my favorite, is there a food that you look forward to every year that you deny yourself because you feel like somehow it makes you sin? And here's my food, but I don't deny myself the food. Here's my food. It's these sugar cookies that my mom made. It's not even that great of a sweet or over-the-top thing. I don't like them with icing. But you know those plain sugar cookies that they tend to just come and we make them with shapes? I love those with tea. And those taste like Christmas to me. So that is something I'll be making, a big pot of that dough and kind of cutting off pieces of it and enjoying it over the holidays. The trick will be, will I allow myself to enjoy these and not have the second thought afterward, which is, should I exercise more or should I not eat dinner, right? That ongoing conversation that I have negotiating with myself because I have the standard of how I want to be in my body every single day. And again, I know I'm not alone with this. I know that I'm not the only one who has these conversations. And one of the reasons that I really want to talk about this body image and eating and our relationship with food is because if we can get a handle on it, it's not only a gift for ourselves, right, to have the joy of being inside this incredible vehicle, which is our body. The gift to ourselves is one part, but the other gift is to those who love us most. Because I recognize, and I've recognized this for years, but I recognize that I am most annoyed or grumpy or short with my husband when I feel cruddy about myself. And I know that because he behaves the same all the time. he's a pretty steady human being. And there are periods of time in our life, in our relationship, where it absolutely gets under my skin, right? I can't be in the same room. And when I take the time to really think about, why am I feeling this way? Why am I feeling so annoyed or grumpy or short-tempered? And I start to realize if I backtrack far enough, it's because I'm really at war with myself at this time, that for whatever reason, I'm not feeling comfortable in my skin or I'm not liking, you know, how I look or something is triggering that. And that kind of self-anger is being projected onto my husband, who then becomes the recipient of that anger. And so my gift to myself to let this go and to really kind of spend part of my holiday giving myself the gift of loving myself and my body is a gift also to my husband, because when I'm in a good space, we're in a beautiful space together. So that state of your relationship with your body, you know, this wondrous machine that we live inside, it houses our soul. It allows us to laugh. It allows us to love, to breathe, to move, to hug, to dance, to enjoy play of all kinds in whatever capacity we can, and also to enjoy pleasure in all forms, from making love, to enjoying a wonderful meal, to really tasting every bite and experiencing it. This meal is something that nourishes us, our heart and our soul and our being. You know, food made with love is incredibly nutritious. And so we have to allow ourselves to take in that food and let it love our bodies so that we can go forth and enjoy the fuel of this love. But if we spend time in battle with our bodies, that intended food that's supposed to fuel us isn't going to have the same effect. It's going to, in some ways, have a negative effect, right? Because the food will get into our bodies. And if we don't enjoy and embrace the pleasure of that, enjoy the pleasure of being in this machine that can run and jump. I mean, this morning I rode my bike to Avalon back, and the whole way, because I was thinking about the show, I kept thinking, I can't believe I can do this. This is a great experience to be able to do this. Thank you, body, for being strong and allowing me this pleasure every day. So where are you with this? 805-781-3875. Hi, Mark. What's on your mind today?
Well, you had a long introduction there about body image and everything. I'd like to come from a male perspective, and I'd like to point out that this whole image that women feel they need to conform to is really a product of other women, the fashion industry, the makeup industry. And we are actually attracted to all sorts of women. There's many tastes out there, and every body type is desirable to someone. And we get really tired of women being so miserable about themselves when we think, you know, you're all wonderful. And in terms of eating, enjoying a meal with someone who is also enjoying it and sharing that experience is a wonderful thing. And someone sitting there just saying, oh, I can't eat this, I can't eat that, and that's not so attractive. A couple extra pounds and enjoying a good meal with someone is the better way.
Well, and Mark, it's interesting because I teach a segment also when I'm talking about body image about attraction and dating and mating and what draws us to other people. And although, you know, looks are the thing that kind of catch our eye, 55% of what really solidifies attraction is in body language. How we, mm-hmm. right? How we carry what we have. And so I'm always trying to, you know, counsel or coach my young women and young men in my class as well, because it goes both directions, is that how you carry what you own is 55% of what attracts other people to you. And then the other part of it is your tone of voice. 35% is your tone and rate of your voice. Which I always find interesting. You know, you don't want to be too high or too low or too quick or too slow with your speech patterns. And then only 7% of attraction is really what comes out of our mouth. But to focus on that 55%, right, to say, here's what I've got and I'm going to use it for what it's worth, that really brings in people to our life.
Well, and the confidence level that a woman has is very, very attractive. And, you know, a woman who may be, you know, a little overweight or whatever, she carries herself with confidence, she's friendly and outgoing, that's attractive. And that's far more attractive than someone who has worked on, say, the perfect body, who's just a miserable, you know, sullen person. And it's not the package that's really all that important. And I think it is these industries that you mentioned and other women that primarily judge women on that purely cosmetic basis.
And it is unfortunate, too, because even the fact that we stop and we'd say, well, even someone who's a little overweight, that buys into that same idea that there is a good weight and that everyone else has to just kind of settle for whatever they have. And that's what's hard to dissect, right, or to take out of the conversation, is that it's not about the weight or the body shape at all. It's all about health and self and sense of self-esteem. Because I'm not suggesting that we just let it all go, right, and just eat whatever and feel badly. Because at this point in my life, I definitely recognize when I eat things that I feel good eating and things that I don't feel so good eating. And so there is that. It's not just about indulging all the time. But to focus on, you know, fueling this machine and feeling good and letting my body be what it is, that's the challenge. Because I don't know if we as a culture know how to find that balance. Either we're, you know, strictly watching everything we put in our mouth so that we always feel good and retain the highest amount of health, or we tend to just kind of let it go and, you know, oh, well, this is as good as it gets. And what we're talking about is trying to find that place in the middle. And I think we don't know that place anymore as a culture. I rarely see anyone who's in that sweet spot.
Well, I think if you're concerned as to whether you're overweight or not, ask your doctor, not a fashion magazine.
But I don't even know if I'd ask my doctor, because as we talked about a few months ago, the body mass index, which is the thing that, you know, the medical profession determines our weight by, has been seen to be a completely flawed measure. UC Santa Barbara did a big research project about it and found out that for, you know, a great majority of the people that are told they're overweight, they're actually quite healthy when you look at all of the other...
Right?
And then
if you're in good health, it's a non-issue.
Exactly. So I don't know if we should ask our doctor either, unless we want to just get our blood panels back and say it's good. All right, so my last question, Mark, is what's the thing you look forward to over the holidays to enjoy?
Oh,
and I'm talking about food.
I love cooking, and Christmas is the best occasion for it. I've got a lot of family coming in, and just good company, good food, and that's really the essence of it for me.
And so is there a special meal that you most enjoy cooking?
Well, it's not so much the recipes as just the giving and sharing of it. That's so very satisfying. My wife keeps telling me, you're working too hard. And I'm like, no, I'm enjoying it. I'm having a good time.
So you're expressing your love through the food you make.
Yes.
Absolutely. Well,
but I try not to force it. I don't I don't want to push the food is love thing. It's okay if you're full.
Yeah, but that's exactly right. Thank you, Mark. Thanks for taking the time to call. This is A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And today we're talking about, well, I brought up the conversation about body image. What is the state of your relationship with your body these days? And as I said, it's not something I bring up often on the show because it is so personal. I think it's challenging to talk about. But I want to talk about it precisely because so much of our sense of who we are in our bodies or what we eat every day starts to become kind of the secret experience that we have. And when things are secret, they tend to make us sick. It's those things that we don't feel we can talk about or share, and we hold in or we keep in this shameful space, that tend to make it more difficult for us to get healthy or to feel whole or to feel accepted. One of the things that's so distressing about the whole idea of body image and body perception and disordered eating is that it has become such a common occurrence for young women to loathe their bodies, to feel horrible in their skin. It's such a common experience in therapy, along with depression and anxiety, the third one being self-loathing. So those are the three most common things that come into a therapist office when we see young women between the ages of 12 and 25. And it's so common that in the profession, we call it now a normative discontent. A normative discontent means that something is so prevalent that we, in most ways, don't consider it abnormal, because more people experience self-loathing or body loathing than don't. And so we don't write it off, but we don't consider it an abnormal response for young women. So right there, we have to look at where are we getting these messages, right? It's easy to look at some of the obvious. We talk about the media and the media images and the unattainable perfection that's put out there and this kind of one definition of what a healthy body looks like. Or to look at the fitness industry or the diet industry and the makeup industry. That is a piece of it. That media message really has defined our cultural definition of what healthy looks like, which is ironic because being thin does not necessarily equate to being healthy. But the other place we don't talk about where these messages come from are within our own families. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges is that we see that the body message is passed along from mother to daughter to daughter to daughter, that it becomes a family pattern. And also with males in the family, they're also getting that message on how they should look or how healthy they should be. So we've seen, in the last 50 years, this increase in eating disorders or disordered eating starting younger and younger. It used to be that we saw eating disorders in young women, 15 and above. Then it dropped, to 12. And now we see young girls as young as 10 who are coming in with disordered eating. And we talk about, women in midlife who are experiencing eating disorders that are reoccurring. This is so prevalent in our society. And so one of the great challenges for me as a mom with two daughters was to work really hard to not pass on or pass along any sort of body distortion or discomfort to my daughters, that I wanted them to really grow up in a house of body love and acceptance. And I had various degrees of success with it, I'm sure, both of my girls. But that is something that as mothers we're also challenged with, because we are generally the source of nutrition for our family. And so what we feed them every day is how we show love. And for a lot of women, the idea is that, well, I don't want my girls to be fat, because nothing is worse than that in life, that anything other than perfect is going to mark them. They won't be popular. They won't excel. They won't achieve. And so there's almost this kind of unintended consequence of wanting to love our daughters in such a way that we actually create this disordered feeling about food by denying them things that they enjoy, or teaching them from a young age that if you're going to eat this, you'll have to exercise obsessively, or if you're, you know, you shouldn't eat, you know, after a certain time. Like all of the rules and the compulsions and the things we set up around food, all these secret relationships we make with food, mothers, and you know, unintentionally pass them on. They hope that they're preventing their daughters from, you know, experiencing the same body loathing that they're experiencing, but what they're really doing is creating the next generation of body loathers. So how do we turn this around? What do we do then over the holidays? What's that holiday gift you can give yourself? How can you reframe your experience with your body? So I have six things that I've come up with, and we're going to talk about them and take your calls after this break.
Home for the holidays, I believe I've missed each and every face. Come on and play one easy, let's turn on every love light in the place. It's time I found myself totally surrounded in your circles. Oh, my friend. Celebrate me home. Give me a number, please. Celebrate me home. Play me one more song that I'll always remember. I can recall whenever.
You're listening to Public Radio KCBX. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. You're invited to be part of this conversation, 805-781-3875. What is the state of your relationship with your body and food and your relationships with those in your life? What are you looking forward to over the holiday season? Is there a special meal that you make to share your love with everyone? Is there something that you tie food together with? Or do you struggle with that? You know, it's a tough conversation. It's a tough thing to say out loud. And again, it's very common to keep these experiences or relationships with food and our body secret in the dark of the night. Bulimia itself is kind of described as the secret disorder, because in public you see someone eating and enjoying food and having a meal and conversing and laughing and looking like they're having a great time, and then they're secretly excusing themselves and then purging that meal out of their body in a very violent way. And then there's that conversation that goes along with bulimia about I'm not worthy of the food, or I can't allow my body to have this. So the whole world of eating, when it becomes secretive, when we're sneaking our food or we're denying ourselves food, that whole secret world becomes a thing that keeps us sick. And it actually prevents us from connecting closely with the people we love the most. Because when we have secrets, right, if we have secret behaviors that we're participating in, then we also are trying to keep out those who love us most from the internal workings of our life. We can't let people get too close when we have this very disordered eating, because we don't want them to discover what we're doing. And so I wanted to talk about some of the things we can do that you can work on to kind of bring yourself into wholeness with your body. Just, if not forever, how about just for the holidays, for the 12 days of Christmas, to give yourself this gift of loving your body. Give the gift to your body. And the first thing I want you to think about is, are you benefiting from focusing on what you believe are the flaws in your weight or your shape? How is it benefiting you, that daily kind of cursing your shape? If you realize it's not benefiting you at all, then sit down and write 10 things you like about yourself that has nothing to do with your weight. Nothing. Just 10 things you like about yourself: your sense of humor, your sense of style, your taste in food, your intelligence, your ability to answer every Jeopardy question, whatever those 10 things are. And if you want, give me a call and tell me one of those things on your list. What is one of those things you like about yourself that has nothing to do with your weight? And then after you make that list, your next day of Christmas, write down 5 things that you like about your body. because we all have five things that we like about our body, right? There's, even if it's your toenails once you've had a pedicure, we all have something that we enjoy. So what are those five things that you most appreciate? Is it your hair, you know, your shoulders, is it a little dimple you have somewhere? But to write these things down, because I said at the top of the show when we were talking with Hank, that intention is very powerful. What we intend in our lives quite often is where our focus and energy goes. And so if your intention are to look at 10 things you like about yourself that have nothing to do with weight, and then the next day write down 5 things you like about your body, you're starting to set the intention that you are going to have a relationship with your body that's about love and acceptance and not about being at war or denial or obsessing about what we put in ourselves each day. So those are the first two. 805-781-3875 to be part of this conversation. What is the state of your relationship with your body? And what gift would you like to give yourself for the holiday season? Hi, Alexi. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I wanted to talk about conscious eating, but after hearing what you just said, I want to say that what I like most about myself is my attitude and my smile.
I love that.
And I think one of the most detrimental things that we can do in life is be in relationship with a person who puts you down. Mm-hmm. That we as women can learn to be confident and walk around naked with our partners, you know, really, really just love and accept who we are. And I got that when one day my parents were divorced and they hadn't been together for a long time. And then all of a sudden I saw my parents standing next to each other, and there was my short, stocky dad and my short, stocky mom, and I went, oh. And from that moment on, I've given myself permission to be short and stocky. It's like, that's who I am. And when I have the confidence to walk around my short, stocky self naked in front of my husband, we have a great relationship.
Well, and I had mentioned earlier that I noticed the only times I feel really annoyed or grumpy with my husband is when I started off first being annoyed and grumpy with myself.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And so some of the joy in our relationships is in loving ourselves so that we can make space to just love and enjoy being with our partners, whoever they are, right? And experience that. And when you talk about conscious eating, tell me a little bit about that. How does that look for you?
There are a lot of things that go into conscious eating for me, but the first thing is being conscious about what I'm putting in my mouth. Mm-hmm. I have a business called the GMO Free Baker, and I'm very conscious about not putting any GMOs in this vehicle. Mm-hmm. I'm way too precious to feed poison to. It's just that's number one in conscious eating, and there are lots of things that go into it, but that's a step one. Be conscious of what you're putting in your mouth.
Well, and it is. And I think sometimes we go unconscious because we have such a distorted or kind of broken feeling about food in our bodies that in order to, you know, that we kind of go numb and then eat, and then wake up and realize, I don't think I enjoyed it. I'm not sure what I ate. And now I feel guilty about what I did. And wouldn't it be better to really fully embrace whatever it was we were putting in our mouth and really enjoy it, and we probably would eat less. Because I remember reading just, you know, this simple, it was from a health book from the 1950s, and it just had very simple instructions for, you know, maintaining a healthy body. It said, eat when you're hungry and stop when you're full, and eat exactly what appeals to you and nothing else.
Oh, yes, and I read that book, too. I wish I could remember her name at the moment. I know exactly which book you're talking about.
And
the one that changed my life was called Love, Medicine, and Miracles by Bernie Siegel.
That one I'm not familiar with.
He asked us to sit in front of a full-length mirror naked and talk to our bodies, talk to the parts we like, talk to the parts we don't like. You know, enter into a love relationship with your own body.
Beautifully said. Thank you, Alexi. And that's exactly the message of today, is that if we can give a gift of any kind over the next month, we first need to give it to ourselves, and then we'll be able to have better relationships with those we love. But we have to start with this one.
Cool. I'm going to enjoy my homemade noodles this season, and have a Merry Christmas.
You too. Thank you for calling in. 805-781-3875. You know, the other thing I was thinking about as Alexi was talking was, if we find this space where we're enjoying our bodies and having a good time, how do we close out the noise outside of us, constantly trying to peck away at these good feelings we have about ourselves? What are the things that you will do to kind of build this wall of comfort around you, right? This sense of belief. So writing down the 10 things you like about yourself, the 5 things you like about your body. But the other thing you have to work on is countering the hater voices that pop into your head when you are enjoying yourself. You know, who am I to deserve this? I'm not completely perfect. If you pay attention to the hater voice that pops up and recognize it and write those thoughts down and move them aside, because quite often we think we're doing well and don't understand how we get off course. And it's because there's this unconscious voice telling us all the ways that we're not good enough that we don't recognize. So day 3 of your Christmas to yourself, your body gift to yourself, is to pay attention to any of the hater voice messages you hear and to write those messages down and put them aside. Day 4 is to do something nice for yourself, just for yourself, whether it's taking a bubble bath or getting a massage or taking a nap or painting your nails or, you know, anything that feels good for yourself, rubbing a nice lotion on your body. Do something that is just a treat for you and your body, and to sit and kind of appreciate your body. And in some ways, I sound like you're having a relationship with someone outside of yourself, but it's really about coming internal and just being in that relationship with yourself, recognizing your body, because we tend to, as a culture, only value everything that happens from the shoulders up, right? We like to think our way through everything, and we really value intelligence and our intellectual capacities. But we really need to kind of bring that attention down into our entire body and pay attention to the magic of digestion, the ability to pick things up with our hand, to be completely fascinated by the mechanics of this machine, and then to do nice things, love and kindness for this machine that is helping to, you know, carry us through life. And I encourage you, because I've had the pleasure of watching my granddaughter the last, you know, year plus develop and grow, that it's so much fun to watch her fascination with herself, her little naked self, where she discovers her belly button and, oh my gosh, this is the greatest thing ever. And then watching her pick up food each bite and tasting it and really kind of exploring what that texture and flavor is. This has been such a great awakening or reawakening for myself this whole year with her, as she's explored her beautiful little body and noticed toes and hair and other people's eyes and nose without judgment, but just, wow, what is this leg that's attached to me? Maybe we need to take that same sense of joy and curiosity about our own bodies and to find the magic in this entire package that we are. 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of the conversation. Oh, Melissa, did I lose you there? Give us a call back. I'm sorry. 805-781-3875. And it's interesting. I know this is a challenging topic, and I appreciate that because I am challenged myself. But again, I encourage you to call in, to talk about that relationship you have with your body, to say it out loud, or something that you appreciate about yourself. What is something you like about your body? Put that intention out there and share it, because I know that I'm not the only one feeling these ways. I'm feeling this way at all. I sat through an art show, you know, this last week and listened to the stories and looked at the art pieces of my young students, and my heart broke for them because they're still struggling, you know, daily with the messages from culture on how they're supposed to behave or how they're supposed to look or what they're supposed to eat. And, you know, it's interesting because most people understand like the big 3 eating disorders: anorexia nervosa, bulimia, and binge eating disorder. Binge eating disorder is basically bulimia without the purging part. But what we don't talk a lot about is another eating disorder, which isn't a DSM eating disorder, but it's just as challenging, and it's called orthorexia. And orthorexia is in itself, it looks like this very proactive, healthy way of being, but it also can get out of hand. Orthorexia is the in focus and intent on eating clean and healthy all the time, of never eating or putting anything in our mouth that isn't absolutely perfect and clean. And it becomes this obsessive behavior in pursuit of a healthy diet, where we become almost fixated on eating in such a way that we feel righteous when we're with other people because we eat so clean that we would never put anything in our bodies that wasn't just perfect and healthy. And it kind of starts off as an innocent attempt to eat healthily, which is great, right? We want to be careful about what comes into our body and our system. We don't want to eat poisons or toxins. It starts off as a way of just being, you know, more conscious and aware. But for orthorexics, people who already are struggling with body image issues or self-esteem issues, this obsession with clean eating can become a fixation on food quality, on the purity of what you're consuming, of how much they eat, and how to deal with when we slip up. People who become orthorexic, which remember is an obsessive behavior, you become obsessive about maintaining a rigid eating style every single day. And when you don't, it becomes about self-punishment. And people who struggle with orthorexia know they're struggling because they stop being able to socialize and go out with friends because their food choices are so limited that they can't go out in any sort of social way and eat and enjoy food. So we've created this culture of people that are searching for the sense of wholeness and acceptance that has this entire underbelly of secret eating patterns from anorexia to orthorexia, which has everything to do with kind of not having this fundamental sense of joy in who we are, in our bodies, because we're told every day that we shouldn't, that we should always do better or do more. 805-781-3875. Hi, Erica. You're on the air.
Hi there. Hi. So I have a little bit of a complicated relationship with food just because I have food allergies.
That
so
makes
I have
it tough.
To be really aware of what I eat, but I'm actually not a very picky person as far as what I like to eat. So sometimes I'm misunderstood in my eating habits. But what my relationship with my body really changed in my 20s when I had started to have to swim all the time and walk around in front of people in a bathing suit. And now I'm so comfortable doing that. I have a very healthy relationship with my body and what it looks like no matter what. And I don't know how it can be transferred to other people other than I tried to model for my children that I'm the one walking around in a bikini in front of a lot of people, and I just try to be very comfortable and open about it.
That's wonderful. And the whole idea of swimming and movement in the water also is such a freeing experience, right? It's just, it takes all of the gravity away and you're just one with your body and the motion through the water. It's poetic.
I would say that's true, yes.
Erica, thank you for taking the time to call. Swimming is also my secret love. So as soon as anyone brings that up, that has always been kind of the place where I felt most in tune with myself, being in the water and moving. And it is an amazing thing when we talk about passing on our relationship with our body onto our children. What are those things we can do to make sure we're modeling a healthy sense of self? Hi, Sharon, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, this is a good topic, of course, and I wondered what you thought about, it is a personal situation with me and my mother, my whole life. When I was younger, say up to 17, I was enough slim that it was okay, but I could tell looking at myself versus my other girlfriends that I was plumper. And as I got older, I just ended up being heavier set. And my mother is always belittling me about weight issues, and she's very detrimental to herself. She's got a lot of body hate going on. Mm-hmm. And she denigrates me all the time about my weight and couches it in a health, and, you know, relating to my health. Mm-hmm. And I keep telling her, you know, pithy things like, well, I promise I'll lose a ton of weight, Mom, if and when I ever get cancer. You know, I'll you know, things like that to make her try to make her back off, which obviously isn't the best way, but I've tried every other way and it hasn't worked either. And I just feel like there's a lot of people who because of health concerns, quote unquote, they really shame you a lot, and it leads to just more self-esteem problems.
You know, I agree, Sharon, and I think it's one of the reasons I did a show earlier this year about the body mass index and how we've kind of used that as a weapon against people who struggle with their weight, right? It's like, it's science. You have to be this weight because your health will suffer. But then, you know, come to find out, there's people who are carrying extra weight according to the body mass index who are far healthier than people who are at their perfect, you know, weight. And so that's, you know, that's a cultural story that until that shifts, unfortunately, is going to be used as a weapon against a lot of people. And the intention may be about health, but that health story is a flawed story. And I wonder, you know, if, in your conversations with your mother, if you've ever addressed for her how painful it must be for her to have such a struggle with her body and how difficult this has been for her throughout her life, and to ask her what that's been like for her. And then to say, I know that you worry for me because you've struggled so much yourself. And tell me about that, because I can't imagine feeling that, you know, upset with my own body that I need
I have done similar things like that. And basically she's so caught up in her own, like, she looks at it like that she's physically got flaws and that she feels fat, and she looks at herself and feels fat, and she really isn't. Nobody thinks that. Her doctors haven't brought it up, but she's just, it's an appearances thing and it's a control thing. Mm-hmm. And she just kind of beats me with it no matter how I we had another big blowout about it over Thanksgiving, where she literally told my current husband that I eat more than two grown adult men. And my husband looked at her. I wasn't there at the time. And he said, you know, that's just not true. I'm a grown adult man. She doesn't eat more than me. So you're off base and you're just beating her to death about this.
And I think, you know, as you found, that she'll never change her perception, right? That we can never change anyone else's perception of the world or how they behave around us. That's one of the struggles in life. When people come in for therapy, quite often they feel like, if I could just get my husband to change, my mother, or that other person, then things would be great. But we can never change anyone else. And so I think your only defense is to go back to what I brought up earlier. And it's, you know, you're never going to get her to say, you're right. I agree with you, Sharon. I don't think you'll ever hear that. And you'll just have to be at peace with, you know, getting the love and affection of everyone else in your life. But when she says things like that, to really try to reframe and say, Mom, I'm so sad that this is how you see the world, and drop it. And just drop it. Just say that. I'm so sad for you that this is how you see the world. And
that's a great way to put it.
But then just drop it, because there's no conversation after that. You know, you won't change her and you are fine and you're healthy. So just keep bringing it back to how sad you feel for her to have to be struggling this way, that she feels she needs to lash out, and this leave it like that. And then that's as good as you can expect. And I think that's for all people, is that when someone really feels strongly about something we're doing, it's really about them. It's always about them. And to just try to have grace for them in their struggle.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you for calling in with that, Sharon, because I know a lot of people are having that same experience in their relationships with their family. And it's one of the things that makes it really challenging to want to go home for the holidays. You know, is your holiday celebration something you look forward to? Will you be able to have that eggnog or the Christmas cookie or, you know, the roast beef or whatever those traditional foods are, and really feel comfortable? Or will you feel those slighted glances from other people in the room, or, you know, from a cousin or a mother or an aunt? I encourage you to embrace this experience and model for those people the joy and pleasure of a meal and connection and togetherness, and to really kind of hold that space for them. And if you feel like saying, I'm sad that you struggle with these issues and feel like I must be struggling too, but I assure you that I'm fine and I hope you can find peace as well, that's all we'll ever really be able to do. And so as we finish up today, I want to kind of leave you with a few more ways of giving your gift to yourself. a gift yourself. And if you have a last comment, I guess we still have 5 minutes, according to Bree. 805-781-3875. If there's something that you want to share, if there's something you love about your body or yourself, say it out loud. Let's set the intentions out there of giving that gift of love for who we are in this vehicle that we're in and how wonderful it is. And how fun would it be to actually go to a holiday party and enjoy some of the things that you really like and go home and talk about what a fun night it was and not feel like you have to get up the next day and beat yourself up. How can you change that? What kind of strategy can you use over the holidays or going into the new year to change your relationship with your body, to make body loathing or body shame something that is not the thing that rules your life? Because there's enough things that we can focus on, right? So another one of the tips for changing your experience with your body is to move in a way that feels fun. Instead of moving in a way that is intended to burn calories or pay penance for something that you ate that you felt you shouldn't, or to, you know, exercise over the top, because, you know, excessive exercise can be as damaging to our health as obsessive restriction of diet of food and calories. So we want to be careful, right, by crossing that line with exercise. How is your relationship with exercise and movement? You know, do you enjoy that cardio class, or do you spend the entire hour, you know, berating yourself and working harder because you feel like somehow you deserved to be punished for the food you ate? Now, remember, that message that you're sending to your psyche is not going to help you in the long run, because those messages we send to ourselves impact our health, impact our sense of well-being, and impact how we relate to other people in our lives. Because remember, as I said, how we interact with those in our lives will be determined by how we feel about ourselves inside. So if we're, you know, feel like that we're not good enough or healthy enough or eating right or looking the way we should, that's going to reflect in how we treat other people in our lives. You know, we don't want to be that mother that starts picking at our children, how they look or how they behave or what they're eating, because we feel so horrible about ourselves. We then turn it on our children and think that we're helping them. We think that we just want them to be healthy or happy. But really what we're doing is projecting our own negative self experiences onto those that we love and making their life miserable. We don't want to pass along a Christmas gift that's going to cause our children to struggle with self-image and self-esteem issues for the rest of our life. So how about taking some of the time that you spend each day obsessing about food or weight or calories or obsessive exercising and do something for someone else? Like, take that hour that you might have spent obsessing on what you were going to eat that day or the calories that you had or working out for an extra hour and write a letter to someone you care about, or write a protest letter, stand up for something you care about. These things, noticing what you like about yourself, finding five things you like about your body, making contact with that inner hater voice and writing those things down and put them aside, doing something nice for yourself each day, and taking that time you would have spent obsessing on your body and do something that's productive. Write that letter. Take action on something you care about. And then finally, every day, move in a way that feels fun. Run with your grandchildren. Take them to the park. Take a yoga class if you enjoy it. Swim. Move in the water. Those things will help you start to reframe your shape and hopefully bring you to a better holiday season. And this has been a conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. As always, I appreciate you being part of the conversation. You can find us on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. You can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Listen to previous shows at kcbx.org or podcasts through iTunes. And as always, I wish you the best this week and look forward to continuing this conversation. And I thank you for supporting Public Radio, KCBX. Each and every face. Come on and play uneasy. Let's turn on every love light in the place. It's time I found myself totally surrounded in your circles. Oh, my friend. Celebrate me home. Give me a number, please. Celebrate me home. Play me one more song that I'll always remember. I can recall whenever I find myself too all alone. I can see.